Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the imaginatively titled The Lee Addison Podcast. You know, I've actually got several podcast name ideas now all of a sudden, but I've called it The Lee Addison Podcast now, so just have to run with it, I suppose. It's a podcast about real people, real life and real issues, and my name is Lee Addison. We've been a bit more lighthearted last week. Last week we spoke about what you should wear and how you should dress with Shelby Alloria from All Set Style. This week it's about how you should speak and speech lessons from Janine Vosper, a public speaking and brand authority expert. She is very good and she talks about the way we deliver messages and also how you should speak in front of crowds of people, etc. And one thing I sort of had a little giggle at when I was interviewing Janine, it was one of our shortest interviews because the message was so clear. So there's something in that. What I'm also going to give you today is a bonus excerpt from another podcast I do, right? It's a great love story. It's a love story, and it's a story about fate, okay, and how fate intervenes. So that will come soon, and then there'll be the music, and then there'll be my interview with Janine, okay? So you're going to have to get two interviews today. So a special bonus. Before I get to that, you can contact me, Lee at sosocials.com.au. That's my email address, Lee at sausageorangesocials.com.au. My website is sosocials.com.au, and Instagram and Facebook for the podcast are the Lee Addison Podcast. For the social media channels, they are Special Ops Socials. Before I get to the interviews, though, and the fun, I just want to talk a little bit about social media. Never ceases to amaze me how many people think that organic posting once or twice a week on socials is enough. Social media is like, or social media posting is like exercise. If you only do one bit of exercise a week or one bit of exercise a month, I think that's been me lately, you're not going to have as good an impact on your health and fitness than if you do 4, 5, 6, 7 a week or more. And basically, that's how you should probably look at your social media, organic social media content. Social media algorithms need a nudge from us, and by posting, we nudge them. And social media platforms want us to post and interact and obviously throw us money eventually too. And if all you do is advertise, then you've got nothing to back it up. And what will happen is people will look at your socials after they've found your advert, and they'll have a look at your Facebook, they'll have a look at your Instagram, and they'll look at some other things. And if you've not posted something for a month or two, they'll think you're going into liquidation, or they'll think you're obsessed with selling. So you've got to give people some value on your social media. And I just wanted to get that in there before the interview. Now, this person is the first person you're going to interview, you're going to hear for on an interview, sorry, is David New. David New was a teacher at James Cook School in Cogra, Sydney. He was a professional sports person, and he now lives in Philadelphia. And it's all because of a woman. Right, we're going to listen to that first, then it will be Janine. You won't hear from me at the end, it's just all music and then the interviews now. And because I won't speak to you, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Take care. There's also a love story involved in how you ended up where you ended up. Now, if you don't tell the full story, I know the real truth off Matthew Elliott. So can you put yourself back at Cogra in the 90s and what the whole story was?
I can. In fact, it's well timed. She just walked in the room. How good was that?
Things are still going strong then.
Donna. Yeah. Donna, come say hello real quick. Say hello to Lee.
Hello.
How are you? We're just about to go through the love story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If there's any lies, you just jump in and let us know.
Yeah, okay. I'm not a nurse. They used to say I was a nurse, but I'm not a nurse. Nice to see you.
You too.
Yeah, good times, mate. How about that? You know, you would never know. We finished the season with St. George, and there was a lot of discussion about an end-of-season trip away, and I'd never been part of any of them. I just didn't go.
Where were you in your rugby league journey then? Were you a reserve grader, first grader, a bit of both? Or
I'd been in both, mate. Been in and out of both.
Yeah.
So it was my first season with the – that was my second season with the Dragons.
Yeah.
Finished out the year, and then we do – we do these presentations around New South Wales country. So the boys at Dragon. I put my hand up for those things because they were fun. Where are we going? I'll Port Macquarie. They'll fly us up there.
Yeah.
We'll play some golf, have some lunch, barbecue, and hand out some awards. And sign me up. And I went away with Mark Coyne. So we went on a trip. I can't remember where it was. Forgive me for my memory loss there. But we went away. And then when we came back, the flight home, we'd had a few cans and still won the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And Coyne's like, let's go to the other pub and we'll finish off and then we're done for the weekend. And I'm like, okay, let's do that. So while we're sitting there, he looks across at me. He goes, you're going to Hawaii. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, we leave on Sunday and you're coming. And he's in the middle of doing stuff. And it's the days before the internet and cell phones. Long story short, I guess he tracked Maddie down and said, we got a ticket for Nui. Make sure he gets his passport sorted. He's on the plane. There it was.
And how were you doing for money at the time? I mean, if you were in and out of reserve grade and...
Yeah. I was teaching. I was a teacher at James Cook High School, so the school I went to. And that's another part of the twist of the story here, because the mob that you coached, we used to hate them forever. They knocked
St. Gregory's?
They knocked us out of a couple. It's interesting because it was a fun time to play because you played hard, trained hard, and you played hard off it as well. You had some
So Coyne's made you a ring in for Hawaii. Did you...
Yeah.
Were you doubting if you could go? Were you thinking, oh, I've got this going on, I've got that going on? Or was it quite an easy
going?
I was hoping you were going to bung it on then, you.
I'd like to dress it up a bit, but it was just straight on.
All right, you got on the plane, went to Hawaii.
Yeah,
the full team or most of them? Or?
Oh, mate, 40 of us.
Okay. That'd have been a pleasant flight for the others.
Oh, yeah, mate, it gets better. So Coyne can be the first one to blame, but then Maddie took it to another level once he got me on board, and then Jethro Hardy and Ricky Walford, that was, and Snoopy Collins, they were the ones that really sealed the deal, because I roomed with Ricky. Jethro and Maddie were across the hall, and mate, we got to the airport. It was a Sunday morning flight, about 8 a.m.
Yep.
And Maddie's the tour guide, so he's got everyone set up, wrangling 40 guys. Think about that on an end of season trip.
I can imagine how easy that was. Yeah,
we're in the transit area, we find out that the flight's cancelled. And we're like, really?
Okay.
And we're like, do we have to come back tomorrow? He goes, no, we've got a 4 o'clock flight. We're going to go up to the lounge. So I'm like, oh, this could be anything. So Jethro Hardy and I were like, listen, let's just watch this unravel. So they're all in the lounge having a ball, having a blast. Jethro and I are watching them thinking, there's going to be 8 hours to the flight, and then there's another 9 hours in the air. Let's get to Hawaii fresh and let's just watch this crew do their thing.
Yeah.
Out of control. As you can imagine, how much fun they were having for the first 8 hours in the lounge and then 9 hours on an airplane. And you think about back in the days flying 90s end of season trips, the security was nothing like it is now.
And also the air stewardesses didn't care how many beers you drunk and
didn't care.
Nah.
Didn't care, mate. So we land in Hawaii and it's you know, it was a party scene up and over the Pacific. You get over Fiji and it's still going, and you get to about Tahiti and it's just darkness and snoring. And 40 guys plus 200 other people on the plane in a coma. We touch down and then Jethro and I become the tour guides. We take over and get everyone checked and get their bags sorted and everything's done.
Because you were sober. You were fine.
Yeah, we were good, mate. We went for a run that morning and we were straight to the beach. And first moment we walk down on the sand, we see a couple of girls lying on the sand. And I'm like, I'm going to marry
her.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jethro's like, so am I. I'm like, are we talking about the same girl? He's talking about someone else behind.
Yeah. How did he go? Is he married to that one or?
No. Not at all.
So
he's happy with his wife from college.
So that was literally your first few hours in Hawaii.
That's it. Yeah, first hour or so on the sand.
Unbelievable. So I take it you weren't far apart from each other for the week or so that you stayed?
No, I didn't get a chance to hang out with her at all. She brushed me.
Well, go on, tell us what happened after that.
I think I fell in love with her and wanted to chase her all around the place and just couldn't get any time.
Yeah, yeah.
Every afternoon.
It still happens now, doesn't it, that?
It does. We'd meet at a place called Shorebirds, which is where the team would go and have their afternoon get-together and kangaroo court and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And we happened to turn up with these Donna and a friend the first day. You know, and I'm telling the boys, like, oh, I'm falling in love here. And they're all looking at me like, behave yourself. What are you talking about? You stupid. And that was sort of every day we'd sort of end up in that bar or the hotel bar, and she'd be in one place, I'd be another, and try to figure it out. And it wasn't until I left, and then she had, I got these business cards made up. It was a little turtle with a snorkel, and it said Dr. David New. So somewhere in the good time, I'd made up business cards. I was a doctor. So one landed in her pocket, I guess, and she called me when she went home.
Yeah. There you go. And so the decision you made when you got home, I mean, how long did it take you to decide you were coming back to America?
She flew down about 2 weeks later.
Okay.
Came down to Sydney, and hung out with us, had some time with us. And then I think I asked her to marry me on that trip.
Wow.
So that was that.
So you've got a potential, I'll call it the NRL, even though it wasn't the NRL then. You've got that pathway, and you've got your teaching career set up. You probably could have had promotion at James Cook, and you might be the principal there by now. And you know, so you got everything in place, and then you decided to make a different decision.
Hi everyone, my name is Janine Bosper. My business is Speech Perfect. What I've been doing for the last few decades is I've been helping people get very, very clear on their message that they're delivering to their audience, because they understand what value they offer, not the product that they have, but the value that they offer people. I've been doing that through running, working with huge sales teams in my role as GM of sales for a multi-million dollar company before moving into my own business. I have done that through coaching in professional speaking, and I represented Australia in 2013 in the International Speech Contest. And I've coached a couple of international winners. Oh, it's part of how you get your message right and how you deliver that message. If you can tell your story and be able to deliver it in a way that engages people as to your why you do things, then that means that you can get your message to market. And that's what I help people do. Pull out those little bits of their story and then share that with the market. If anyone just knows the disc profile, I'm a D, or I'm a choleric, which means that I like to get things done and I can set tasks and set goals and achieve them. And what I find when I work with clients is sometimes that's not people's forte, and I help them program things so that they actually achieve the results they want. And putting it all together, it helps people step up to stand out in their own brand.
Janine, I call you the woman who is everywhere. So everywhere I go, I see Janine.
Oh, I am.
all the meetings, and also you're very prolific on email and socials and everything. And you really get yourself out there, don't you? And I guess my question in and around that is this the era of personal branding?
It's actually, it's a number 8 year and a dragon years, depending on what what you follow and how you follow it. And that's everyone that I'm reading about the number 8 means it's a year of everything that you've put together. This is the year that you're going to have the opportunity to shine. So everything that's you've been working on, it's going to culminate this year. And if that's around your personal brand, it is certainly the year that you need to step up and own that personal brand, step in front of your business and not be behind it. So yes, I think it is.
See, I interviewed somebody else who thinks that because of the so-called cost of living crisis, people are reluctant to spend. And the way to counter that, if you're in business, is maybe not to throw as much on paid for advertising, but spend more time developing your personal brand and putting it out there. Well, I would say that the next best conversation now, based on the fact I've just said that, is to talk to someone who's always out there and talks about personal brand a lot. And I guess, you know, do you feel like personal brand is more important in 2024 than it was in 2022?
Most definitely. What I think we found since the lockdowns and the world changed a little bit in 2020 and 2021 is that people want to buy, really get to know the people they're buying from. It's not just simply, you know, racing on through life. We want to buy from our local grocer now rather than multinationals. And that's where that your own brand has to stand out, whether it is a local brand or it is something that you take to the world nationally.
Yeah.
I've been in my business since 2007 and I have never paid for advertising.
Okay.
In that entire time. Actually, I will rephrase that. I originally paid to get traffic, not to market a particular product,
yeah,
to get some traffic and support through, that was on Facebook, but that was very low spend and what I've done since then is generate everything organically, whether it's the We Are Women podcast, which I've had for about 7 years now, whether it is, as you said, there's weekly emails that go out, blogs that go out to clients, there's, you know, plenty of blogs on website, it's social media, making sure that you're across all the platforms, that you've got a consistent message going out. You're giving information, not just asking for things, and to be seen, as you said, be seen everywhere. It depends on your business as to, it's of high value to me to be networking and be seen.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people spend a lot more, too much time networking, and it's not where their business, they need to direct it, but people need to find individually what works for them and then ask the question, why am I doing this? Is this part of my vision and my mission? And this is this staying on track with what I'm doing? If the answer is yes, well, then you need to be out there doing it.
The speech and messaging, first of all, before we give any tips or I extract some tips out of you, when did you realize you might have a skill for doing this?
Speaking probably at about 6 months old, and my parents told me to shut up.
So 20 years and 6 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, something like that, yes. I've always enjoyed conversation, and I think all the way through school, every single report was distracting to others, talks too much. And the thing was, I could understand the information and get the good results, but then I distracted others because I'd be talking. But that doesn't make you a good speaker. Talking too much does not make you a good speaker.
No.
Having the confidence to do, you know, to stand on stages. And the biggest stage I've stood on is about 1,000 people in the room, and I deliver a 20-minute presentation. That was about work-life balance, that one. What really got me into the speaking component of it and being able to do it professionally myself but also help others achieve their results was something, there was a line in the sand moment. One of my dearest friends, and it's interesting, I had a really lovely conversation with her this morning. Her dad passed away. He'd been ill for quite a while. And so when he passed, it was expected.
Yeah.
And they had been members of this same church, the beautiful little, you know, those little churches that actually is the A-frame shape and all the pews lined up. And we went to his funeral, and the pastor had known them for 20 years. He gave beautiful eulogy. Friends got up and spoke on his behalf. It was wonderful. 2 months later, my friend's mum passed unexpectedly. And in the meantime, the pastor that they'd known for 20, 30 years had moved on. There was a brand new pastor at the church who didn't know the family well. There was nobody could speak on her behalf. Now, she was one of the most amazing women, that she could put her hand to anything. She was kind and sharing. Yep. She was a beautiful mother, grandmother, and parent. And nobody could really tell her story and tell it well and share that with her. And I'm sitting at the pews with my mum and dad. And the pastor gave a nice rendition, but it wasn't her. And I sat there and I just went, I'm never going to be mute again. I'm never, ever, if I want to be able to say something, I want to learn the skills to be able to do it, and I want to be able to do it. It was such a traumatic moment for me that we couldn't, nobody could share anything about this amazing woman. And so since then, I learnt the skills myself and, you know, Googled public speaking groups and day sort of thing and went along to it because I knew I had messages and stories and motivation. And look, I was a confident person, and I'm sitting there going, I can't do this. I can't say this. But since then, I've been able to, as I said, speak on stages around the world, but also speak on behalf of friends and family who have passed. And other people have come up to me and said, I'm so glad you did that, Janine, because you said exactly what I wanted to say, but I didn't have the ability to do it. So that was my line in the moment, sadly.
Unbelievable, that story. The give us some nuggets that, you know, obviously you don't want to tell everybody everything that about speech and what they should do, because you can't do that, but some key tenets of it.
One of the things when people get very, very nervous about anything, but particularly public speaking, I mean, the Seinfeld joke about people would rather be in the casket than delivering the eulogy is something we hear often. But a lot of people have a great fear of public speaking.
Yeah.
And one of the things I tell you, that gut feeling, that nerves and the butterflies that you've got in the gut, you want to recognize that is nearly exactly the same feeling as excited. You know, when you're about to jump on a roller coaster or something and you're really excited to do that, or it's the same feeling. So rather than talking to yourself and saying, I am nervous, I'm scared, I'm not comfortable, tell yourself that you are excited instead. But that'll get you out there to put one foot out and do it the first time.
What about the one that seems to have done the rounds for years, where you pick one person out and pretend that they're naked?
No. That would be very scary, particularly depending on the person.
But that has done the rounds, though, hasn't it?
Oh, goodness me, yeah. I think that would turn most people off and terrify them, having to look out.
I mean, I guess speech is almost very similar to writing certain kinds of stories that are short form. So, you know, what if your first paragraph or your first line of a speech, I suppose, anything in and around that you can share with us?
There's different things that you can do to grab your audience's attention if you're delivering a speech. And one of the most powerful is to stand there silently. Just don't say anything.
Yeah.
Because then eyes turn on you.
Yeah.
And it gives you a lot of an opportunity to ground yourself as well and feel more comfortable. Yeah. You can start speeches with rhetorical questions, not my favorite, or questioning people. And unless you really know the room, it makes people feel uncomfortable and they'll shut down. So it's not my favorite thing to do. You can start off with a declarative statement, a fact or a statistic. 70% of women will be homeless by retirement. You know, that's a statistic that I use a lot when I'm presenting, because I particularly work with a lot of women sole traders and people to be successful. So we've got to figure out a way that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you start off with those things. I think that the speech that I won, the Australian level, I started off with part of a poem, and it was part of Robert Frost's poem, Road Less Travelled. And so I wrapped up at the end. You know, it was, and this is going back a long time, two roads diverged in a wood. Oh, that was the end. The end, you wrapped it up at the end, and the end was two roads diverged in the wood, and sorry, I could not travel both. And be one traveler, long I stood and looked down one as far as I could. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning, and then wrapped it up at the end. So you can do that sort of thing, you parcel it up as long as it makes sense on the topic you're speaking about.
When you talk about speech and you talk about your first line, your first paragraph, and you also talk about when you came into business or this business in 07.
Mm-hmm.
The emergence of the internet and social media and whatnot has obviously taken messaging and speech in a, I wouldn't say a different direction, but in a sub-direction, I suppose, that has become even more important. So I would assume that you also work with people in terms of getting the message right in a one-minute video grab or a 30-second grab.
I'm glad you brought that up, Lee. I ran a workshop the other day. I run small group workshops a few times a year on professional speaking, and that's what someone asked me. They were doing a video, and they start with their name and their business. Who cares? Nobody cares about that. They just want to know why they're going to listen for the next 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And I know I did a video while I was out walking the other day. I often do it when I'm out walking. And I just started off with, so at what date do you stop saying Happy New Year? Is this the date or not? And then,
well, it's the first time I've seen you this year, so Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Lee. And that was the question, but then it went on into what I wanted to promote was a planning workshop I've got coming up, you know. But if I had just started with, hi, I'm Janine from Speech Perfect, I've got a planning workshop, you know, people would have shut down straight away. But it was that, okay, so that's a bit of a, in that sort of video, rhetorical question, because nobody's being threatened by that question because they're just listening to it on a video. And I did one the other day, which I'm yet to put out there, and And it was about people calling people names. So I just sort of started off with sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Of course they will. And then went into, you know, something about that, about how it's important we get our words right.
The best speech you've ever seen?
It's interesting. When I do my workshops, I've pulled about four or five speeches that I get people to add punctuation marks. A lot of the time when we're delivering speeches, we don't add punctuation marks. We just continue all the words together. We forget that we need commas,
mm-hmm.
we need full stops, and we need to take that time for the audience to catch up with what we're saying. The speeches that I use is Ronald Reagan's at Brandenburg Gate, which is a great speech.
Yeah.
And then asking Gorbachev to come and pull down the wall. I use Obama's inaugural speech. I always find that's a good speech to use. There's a couple of others, but you can't go past Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. No. You really can't. The words that he uses, it's not just the delivery of that, which is so powerful. If you listen to it, the pauses are so long because it's such a big audience. But he uses words that create an image and jangling discords. You know, it's wow. We know what that is. You know, hew the mountain and make the plains flat. And all of this, we can visualize it as we go. And that's such an important factor when you're writing a speech. And it's the same when I'm teaching people to pitch. What does it look like? How can people identify what you're saying with what it looks like or what it looks like to them?
Best orators, you think, in history? Because it doesn't mean they did the best speech.
No, I know. And one of the best orators, this is going to really challenge people here. There's two of them, and they're both on opposite sides of the argument in World War II. And one was Hitler.
Yeah.
And that will challenge people, but an amazing orator. He moved a nation to do things.
That's right. And I think, you know, some people are loath to say it because of the horrible things that he pushed through. But, I mean, I've watched some of his speeches and the way he moved his arms and the tone of his voice and whatnot. He really, he moved a nation, literally.
Yeah. And the opposite side, the British Prime Minister.
Yeah.
We'll fight them on the beaches. That's it. Yeah. I'm trying to think of his name.
Winston Churchill.
Winston Churchill. They were both brilliant orators. They grabbed their nations.
Talking of British Prime Ministers, Tony Blair's last speech, because he was a good speaker as well in coming a bit more into the modern day, and they reckon his last speech was his best.
Really?
I haven't
heard it. I'll have to go and listen to it because I'm always interested in learning.
What about modern orators, the ones that are knocking around now? Is Boris Johnson as good as he thinks he is?
I haven't Donald really Trump, listened to a Joe great Biden. Deal of what he said. I can't identify any Australian politicians as a good speaker. I really haven't come across any. But they have their own style of speaking that grabs an audience. And someone as direct as Bob Catter, without going either side of politics, I've gone down the middle, you know, he targets his audience very, very well. And he gets his message through to his audience, which is the whole point of speaking. Yep. You can't affect everyone, but knowing who you—that's the most important part of speaking—is knowing who your audience is and delivering that message to them. I won't even go into the American politics because, I mean, out of 350 million people, that's their choice. Those two, either way, I don't care. There's 350 million people that they can choose from.
I do think there's an intellectual conversation to be had, though, about the quality of Donald Trump's delivery in terms of how simple his messaging is and how he repeats it and whatnot and how he entertains people.
Absolutely. He really, again, he speaks to his audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a bit controversial here. He actually got a lot of great results when he was in power. People forget that. But when he was the president. But it is as an orator, yes, it is a simple message.
And he repeats it. So we've sort of talked about speaking quite a lot there. What about messaging? And what do you say to people who, what little tip can you give someone about messaging? Because messaging can also be in the written word too, so, and also in visuals. So what do you tend to advise people in pertaining to messaging?
The messaging is again, it's got to grab people. It's, and when I come back to the sales, because in my background has been 4 decades of coaching in sales and being in sales. I said that really quietly, didn't I?
Four decades, yeah.
And part of it was as an aerobic instructor for 10 years. That was a sales deal to get people to put their shoes on and get to the gym. We're all in sales. Every single person is in sales at some level. Even if you don't have a job, don't have a business, you don't work, at some stage you want to convince your kids not to take drugs, or you want to tell your girlfriend that dress
looks good. Well, I've been a coach and teacher all my life, so guess what? I was trying to sell a concept to everyone all the time.
We're always selling. So that messaging is really important. But again, I don't care what you do. I just care what you do for me. That is something to remember all the time. So if you, if I was saying, I am a sales coach, I can say that, or I can say what I do is I work with people to improve their message so that they have people coming to them to, and rather than having to push out all the time and be comfortable in sales. So you switch it around as to something that will resonate with the audience without telling them too much, because what I could say in another pitch in that same sort of framework is, we've often had a conversation with somebody, but where the money is in the follow-up. And a lot of people they really go back into that, I don't want to bother people. And this is where I help them move through that space. But you want to make sure that if you're having a message with somebody that you're messaging, you're not telling them 10 different things at the same time. We can only take in about 7 max. 3's preferred. 1, if you've got a 1-minute pitch, hit with one thing.
Give us some success stories from your current business.
For me or for clients?
Both.
Both. So the variety, I work with a lot of female sole traders, but I also work with businesses. I go into business who don't usually expect that they're in sales and help them get clear on their message with different forms of training. And that might be banks or law firms, engineering works. Again, people who, I'm not in sales, but I need my that team to, have KPIs. They've got to convert the clients over and to work with them. I worked with a law firm a little while ago, a family law firm, and part of what they wanted was, again, for them to be comfortable in that sales message. And every one of their staff was very much in a different space about how they were going to approach that and how comfortable they felt with it. From one guy that was, yeah, no worries, I'll convert everything, I'll do it, to another person said, no way in the world, I'm not going to pitch the business. And that's what I do, is I help people realize that you are not selling. What you're doing is helping people resolve their problems.
Yep.
And if your focus is 100% on resolving problems,
so
I really challenge people. People have to deal with it when I work with them, going, so what? Your ego is more important than that person getting the resolution for that. And when they start sort of shifting around a bit, they realize that, it is actually. That's not the way I want to be, because they usually say, oh, no, I'm coming from the heart. Well, no, you're not, when you place your ego out in front of helping someone get the results. And we also had to work on, with this particular firm, was a glass ceiling, how far people could extend themselves. So each time I do training, I would figure out what the client wants or needs and then build something, because I've got extensive experience. So that they were amazed at their change in attitude. And that's the thing that I can walk away from, is to go, yeah, that's quite incredible how that has changed them. Worked with a lot of individual clients, branding ones, that I run a 12-week branding program, and one of the last programs, one of the clients was a lawyer just setting up a business and, wanting to run a business, have more downtime. So in the last few months, she's raised the revenue of the business enough, she's been able to put on 2 employees. There's a whole lot of those sort of things with what's the goal that you want to achieve. Well, another person's got a online business and increasing the sales significantly in that. So it's all different, but it's it's building the confidence around to be able to talk about who you are, where it comes back to.
Well, this may be testament to your messaging and your perfect speech, considering your speech perfect. But you've really got your message over quite clear today. And, you know, at this juncture, I'd like to say, how can people get hold of you, and what kind of people should get hold of you, and where do you want them to find you?
I will do that. I have to tell you about Speech Perfect. I originally started with my business name was Shifting Visions. So when people get invoices, it's still a little bit of that with the bank.
Yeah.
And we were at a wedding one time, and sitting in the back of the room at the table, you know, celebrating a little bit.
Yes.
And the people were delivering speeches were holding the microphone around their belly button. I don't know what they expected to come from there, but that's not where we could hear them. And we had a little consensus around the table, and Pitch Perfect, a movie, was out at the time, you know, with the girl singers.
Yeah.
Yes. So there was a great deal of discussion over a few bottles of wine at the wedding, and we decided that we need to be Speech Perfect.
Well, I think sometimes my best business ideas come out when I've had a couple of stronger things than coffee.
Yeah. So how can people get in touch with me? Yeah. There's lots of different ways, but the easiest is probably these two. One is my website, which is JeaneBosper.com. And I really want to encourage people. I offer a free 30-minute strategy call. And we'll just have a conversation and see what you want to achieve. And if I'm not the best one to help you do that, because of my podcast and having over 150-something people I've interviewed, I can find someone that can help you with what you want. And I'd rather do that, because my whole mission in life is to ensure that people achieve what they don't believe they can possibly achieve.
And I think, Jeanine, if people focus on that in business about solving people's problems, like you said, sometimes that involves telling them, no, you shouldn't spend that money on me. I've done that this morning to someone.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds like it's a negative move, but ultimately that person, it will hopefully say, Lee's a good fella. I want, you know, and if he meets somebody else and they need something that I can offer, that's literally how I do it.
Look, it is so important, Lee, to be really honest about that capacity. You know, I love it when someone says they're, you know, a 21-year-old life coach. It's well, that might work for 16-year-olds, but it's not going to work for someone who's 40. You know, help out people where you know you've got the strength to be able to do that. The other way to get in touch with me is on LinkedIn. I have a big LinkedIn presence and do a lot of share a lot of content, whether it's the podcast or with blogs or just quotes. I just have to throw this in. I've got a fabulous, I work with a photographer and a stylist each year, and we have a fabulous brand and style retreat in Airlie Beach in May. Yeah, so we've got a couple spots left on that one for this coming year, so that I had to throw that one in.
Just to round off, in my last job, right now I'm mid-40s, right? So in my last job, before I went into business, I was 42, 43-ish. In my head, I felt 22, 23-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a significant non-spoken about, but a significant and not an official vibe there that certain people of my age and definitely older and sometimes a little bit younger were seen as past it and too old, and their methods weren't right and this, that and the other. And there was one episode where a lady who had been promoted to a job a bit higher up, she came to see me. I had a problem with my computer. I had a laptop that was you've got the typewriter, and then I think my laptop came out the year after, and it just took 10 minutes to get anything going. And when you're in a form room and you've got 10 minutes to mark the roll, and this lady was in this higher up position, she wanted to get us all to do a song and dance about a few things in that form room. I wrote to her in the staff room before. I said, is there any chance you can just email me what I need to say, because my computer's really slow? Now, I'm not criticizing this lady, but it's an absolute metaphor for what I'm bringing up. She decided the best way of dealing with this was to come and see me. and help coach me on how to use these apps.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't, it didn't even cross her mind that maybe I had tried this 100 times prior and knew I had a problem and blah, blah, blah. And that's maybe why I'd emailed her. And after the fourth or fifth attempt of her trying to coach me, I had to say to her that, with all due respect, I own two websites that are the biggest of their kind in the world, in their sphere. I know how to use a computer. Please, can you get me this information? Because I won't get it to them. Mm. And she said, okay, I'll email you. Right?
Right.
That is a metaphor for how some of us of a certain vintage are seen, isn't it? Because we have this, and you know, it's been too nice, this podcast. We need to get a bit controversial. But, you know, we have you found that? You know, you quietly said four decades. Where, really, that should be all you need to say so that people come running to you.
Yeah, it should be, shouldn't it? And it does make a difference with the experience. There's a couple of things there. I think it's important, if you are in business, to learn skills that you need on a daily basis to help you with your business, unless you can afford to pay someone else to do it. I think that's important. Makes a lot of sense doing that. And I've had to, you know, learn a lot of things along the way. I'm trying to teach my husband how to log on to do banking at the moment. He has trouble with his phone lead. No, I'm serious. He can't, his phone won't swipe. You know? So
right.
I'm the person that's coming. Surely there's a way you can do this. And I was showing one of my sons my crypto stuff just so that he could, there was someone in my world that had the capacity, and he's, and they're all my men are in construction. They just looked at me and like, I don't know why you're showing me this. You know, is there anyone else you could show this to? So it's that part of it. We need to gain information. And that's part of my high values, as I continue to gain information along the way. But we do need also to recognize, and I work with clients and I have to hold their hand through all the smart things because they don't want to learn it. They just want it done for them.
Yeah.
That's part of, you know, with your social media things, that you do things for people as part of one of the business options. You just want to be able to do things. But you need to communicate with people to find out what's their learning style. That's such an important and their personality profile. You know, some people use DISC, as I mentioned. There's choleric, sanguine, melancholic, and phlegmatic. It's, you know, if you're teaching someone who's who's sanguine, who's way out there, and you're trying to get them to sit down and do dot points, there's no way that's going to happen. So you really, there's a whole lot of components within that space. Age has got nothing to do with it. No. I'm in the middle of my, I don't know whether you say sixth or seventh decade. I'm 65 this year. So, yeah, there's been a lot of experience there. And will I continue doing what I'm doing? Absolutely.
And you're 65 and full of drive. I didn't intend to do a poem there, but
there we go.
Yeah.
But it's the individual, and it's part of, like, that person should have communicated much better with you. You should not have had to say, hey, I'm not dumb. I can do this. I don't want this. And really important to be able to learn to communicate with people.
Because we do have a problem, don't we? That it's happened all our lives. We thought we knew more than our parents and our friends of our parents. We thought we knew better. That's the nature of youth.
Mm.
But it seems to be a lot more exacerbated now, I think, because of our social media world. And if you want to be a mechanic, you don't have to do a four-year course anymore. You can now just go on YouTube and find out how to replace the filter in your car, kind of thing. So,
yeah, that has made it more accessible for people to understand and do tasks.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm the first one to go to YouTube and go, how can I do this on WordPress if I want to do this? And okay, now I got it. But there's certain things that you just need to be in a room with somebody who has had that experience and had those skills and can tell you the real background or the way to do it without having to spend so much wasted time and energy and money in doing trial by error or, you know, learning from the wrong people as well. This is something that, as a coach for a long time, there's so many people out there and I that are just the wrong people for people.
So repeat how people can contact you again, Janine.
Website, JanineVosper.com. For
Janine
those
with a double E-N, by the way.
I know. For those that are watching, you can see my background. You'll see that what it is. For those listening, it's JanineVosper.com.
So messaging, really. You should have changed your name.
The beauty of that is that it's spelt as it's meant to be said, not Janine.
Correct.
And, yeah. and also LinkedIn is the other way.
And what did you say? It's the year of the dragon or something, did you say?
It is the year of the dragon. I've just been reading a little bit about numerology and what it is, and everything I'm reading, excuse me, is talking about this culmination of what everything you've put in place. We're going into an 8 year, and everything you've been putting in place should come to fruition this year.
The oracle has spoken. This is the year. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lee. It was fun.
You're welcome.